All right, we got the golf talk out of the way. Segment two, the crossover. We're very talented people. Talk about stuff that they didn't do before and what they do now. Why am I being so dramatic? Because I know these two guys pretty well. Two of my favorite people, period. One of them has dropped tape after tape on SoundCloud and has inspired producers up and down the coast and around the world. The other one released an album that charted at number one on iTunes. And yet I'm going to ask them about sports to start because that's why this is called The Crossover. Cam Fletcher, Ty Brown, what's going on, fellas?
Inqua.
Chilling, man. Good.
Why was that so muted, Ty?
What, the unqua? I have a natural gate.
Natural.
Fine, natural fine. Noise gate.
Touche. Touche. So like I said, we start off by asking you about stuff that maybe you don't, quote unquote, do now. Did y'all play sports growing up?
Yeah.
I did. A lot of people don't know this. The YMCA had a church league, a basketball league. Okay. And I don't really like to talk about it. I didn't even know you was going to bring it up, but I was a legend. I was a legend. But, that's neither here nor there. I did play.
You used the word legend that said you didn't want to talk about it. You know that means I have to make you talk about it, right?
Yeah. Listen, man, this was talking about 20, 30 years ago, you know. There was a game, it was a championship game, and the star player ended up getting sick. And it was like, it was a fourth quarter, 30 seconds left. The coach didn't know, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know what to do. And I said, now, I wasn't playing. I was on the bench that game. But I just knew that I could contribute. I knew I could get us the W. And I said, Coach, I got this. I got this.
Okay.
I got us.
Okay.
And he trusted me. So I took off my sweatsuit. I don't know why y'all laughing. I don't know why y'all laughing. This really happened.
Okay, so you took off the sweatsuit.
Took off the sweatsuit. 30 seconds left. I get in the game, and I drop. You're not even gonna believe this. I dropped 60 points
in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Listen, it was on the news. If you pull up the New Brent Herald, because that's our newspaper. And you know, listen, that's what I'm saying. If you look in the archives, there was a little blurb about it in the back. Like with the obituaries, it was in the back right there.
With the obituaries.
There was a little blurb about it. But yeah, that happened. I had to be maybe 11 or 12, but it definitely happened.
60 points in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Where's your Guinness plaque?
This is just a small regional thing. It wasn't really, nobody was there to record it. This was before cell phones and all that, But had this had happened, during social media, I wouldn't be here with y'all.
Well played. Well played.
Oh, Jesus.
But Cam played ball, though.
Yeah.
I was about to ask you what really happened, but let's go with what's your background.
I believe that. I believe he played.
Okay. Because I was about to say, God really can do miracles.
He can. Mm-hmm. I don't know about all that, but he Ty played. Mm-hmm. But, I played basketball. I was more sort of a, I ran track. So I played football, freshman, and sophomore year of high school. I stopped playing because of my hands, because, I'm a musician. So I was doing like the bear crawls at practice, and it was raining, and my hand got stuck in the mud.
Oh nah!
And I kept going, and I pulled it back. So Jeez. Yeah, I stopped playing after that. I was done. And then, growing up, of course, I did church league. That's how I knew he was telling the truth. He did it because he went before me. His season was before mine. So
okay,
I played with the Spotswoods.
You played Spotswoods.
Yeah, Spotswoods.
Yeah, they wasn't good.
We was great. What you mean? But it was great.
But none of y'all went to the church.
No, I know. We was all from the outside.
That's illegal.
Yeah.
That's a wow.
But we love the Lord. So we ended up doing it. We ended up doing it. But yeah, I did that. I did Hoop It Up with my boys, Isaiah Bodie, Bishmel Campbell, Angel Aponte. We did Hoop It Up with Hoop It Up back then in Hartford. We did that, and then I was like champion of standing long jump, and yeah, there's a lot of things nobody know about me when it comes to the sports stuff. I started playing golf when I was 13, and yeah, track, basketball, all that stuff was like my favorite, my go-to. Yeah, so
I know you sort of said the moment when you were like, "I'm ready for music," mm-hmm. and that was football practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared to ask this time. I'm gonna ask it anyway. What was the moment where you were like, "All right, it's time. It's time to move to the music."
Well, I was always doing music. Music was always first. Mm. Being in church league was just all my friends was doing it, so it was fun. I liked it, so I just did it. But I never had a desire to like seriously pursue sports. I was always into music.
Growing up, what did y'all like to watch? Like, what's a sports moment that you remember, like, just watching and being like, oh, that's actually kind of cool?
Just watching Allen Iverson. That was, like, my go-to.
Ooh.
Watching him play. And Kobe, that was my Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? So, like, because, like, when he died, I was messed up. Like, people love Mike, but I was Kobe Bryant, Allen Iverson all day. Watching that matchup happen, that was those moments were everything to me. Watching that, so
yeah, I'm a Jordan era. That's so I remember those games against the Jazz and the Pacers. Those were like some really epic matchups. So those stick out in my mind. And football, I really like Deion Sanders. So I loved watching him. He was on the Falcons, and then the 49ers, and then then he went to the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
So watching his transition, he's somebody that definitely I looked up to. I liked his sportsmanship for sure.
Now, when it came to like trying to balance being in music with everything else that like comes with life, we've probably gone through a bunch of different situations where there are people around us that were either as talented or had more of it, but didn't do what you both have done. What kept y'all going?
Man, just having that gift, something deep, in, you know, something just deeply rooted, you know, in your soul. That's like, you got to keep going. You know your purpose, you know, because nowadays people don't know their purpose. You know, so they just, you know, they do the things that's satisfying, but they don't do the things that's like, you know, rooted in them, you know. So I don't know when that moment was for me, but I just knew that my purpose was music, you know, and that's kind of where I'm at still standing today, because the job's not finished, you know.
I like that. I could say the same. Like, I used to find myself in a situation where I was looking at what other people were doing and would wonder and even like pray, like, you know, when, you know, what about me? You know what I'm saying? Like, when is the things that I'm seeing happening for other people, when is it going to be my turn to experience that? But after some years of never quitting, you start to develop that understanding that what's for you is for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll never have to chase what someone else got, because you don't know what they had to do or endure to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be something that you don't want to do. You know what I'm saying? So that's what keeps me going.
Yeah.
So along those lines, because when did you start putting out the gospel tape? Because I've heard the last couple ones that you've dropped, but when did that start being something that you really like leaned into?
Well, originally, how it all started was I would just do the remixes for fun. And I would let, you know, let my friends hear it. And then it evolved from there because it actually started sounding, like, pretty dope. And I said, well, maybe let me just put a couple on SoundCloud, a couple remixes, and see what kind of response I get. And one of the first remixes, I think, was Suit and Tie, the Justin Timberlake joint. And literally, like, overnight, my SoundCloud was blown up. Because I put music on SoundCloud before, like, original music, mm-hmm. and wasn't nobody listening to that. I had, like, 20 plays, and the song been up there for 5 years. You know what I'm saying? And stuff like that. Even MySpace music, I had stuff up there too. But something really seemed to resonate when I was putting these remixes up there. And so I said, well, let me compile. Because by that time, I had maybe like 30 or 40 just sitting in my computer that I didn't release. So I said, let me just put a little compilation joint together and throw it on Bandcamp. And everything just took off from there.
Who is your favorite producer? Like, who is somebody you take cues from? Not necessarily like you trying to be them, but mm-hmm. who are a couple of those people for you?
Well, my earliest musical inspiration is definitely my father. So he's my foundation for everything that I know. But once I started to really develop and try to find my niche, I was getting into Prince heavy and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Like, once you start listening to music and you start reading the credits and you'd be like, okay, this is who I need to... Because Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and Prince, they all kind of from the same umbrella. Mm-hmm. And then you start listening, you realize Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis was doing Janet Jackson stuff. So then they started listening to Janet stuff. So it was just like a rabbit hole from there. And just, so for me, Prince, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, J Dilla, Q-Tip, George Duke, Jeff Lorber. So these are like
heavy
people that had a huge impression on me. But definitely, I say if anybody, definitely Prince.
We're going to get to that in a little bit because I want to talk a little bit about Prince. But what about you, Cam?
Both my families, from my biological father and my mom, they're both musicians. So it's heavy on them in the church scene. After them, it's Kanye, of course. Kanye West and Rafael Sadiq. Russell Ferrante from the Yellow Jackets. Jaco Pastorius. It's a whole bunch of people that's kind of like not known for the, you know, because they're, I feel like there's a lot of producers that's well known, like of course like Kanye West, but the people that are not known seem to have the more oomph about their, you know, their music, because they're not, I guess you could say, sold out, you know what I mean? So, but they're sold out amongst their, how they live, you know what I mean? So I guess you say my favorite producer is just life in general, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes plenty,
you
know, of sense.
Because you can produce so much in life, that'll push your production because it won't stay the same. So life is my favorite production.
See, I love the fact that you brought up Jeff Lorber, because when I grew up, it was a lot of smooth jazz in my mm-hmm. house.
Yeah.
And then I was actually telling a couple of the team the other day, like, I tended to listen to music backwards, okay. because like in the house we weren't really listening to hip-hop like that,
right.
In fact, I was listening to it like on the low, like I heard the Black Album when I was in like eighth grade,
okay,
and I did not bring that home,
right.
But then my freshman year of college, I'm like, oh, hold up, I was listening to American Gangster, then I went mm-hmm. and redid the College Dropout, yeah. and the Blueprint. I'm like,
What's this?
This is what all the hype was about.
You was a late bloomer.
Yeah. I was very, very that too.
Because yeah. I was never listening to the stuff that's on the radio. I'm still kind of like that now. Mm-hmm. I was listening to this stuff from the 70s and 80s. You know, and it's what in the 2000s, late 90s, you know what I'm saying? So people my age, they're listening to, you know, what's happening currently. I'm listening to, you know, old Prince records.
I'm a blow y'all mind right now. Just take a wild guess what decade I was listening to in fourth grade.
Ooh.
Just take a wild guess.
You said in what grade?
In fourth grade.
Fourth grade. So you was what, 9?
I didn't have the CD player yet. Make that fifth grade.
Okay.
Fifth
grade. I don't know. The 60s, like Motown?
Man, I can't even guess.
I was listening to a Benny Goodman Carnegie Hall concert from the 1930s.
Jeez. Yeah, that's way back, bro.
I was studying those liner notes. Mm-hmm. I'm talking Babe Russin on the tenor sax, Gene Krupa, and that was, mm-hmm. you know, that was segregation at the time. Yeah. They brought in, I want to say they had, the names escaped me. I want to say Johnny Hodges was on the liner notes, mm-hmm. but that's when they brought all the black musicians in for like that one segment to mm-hmm. play with Benny Goodman and them. Mm-hmm. And then they left. But yeah. those mm-hmm. songs and all that sort of stuff, that just kind of ran those over and over. Mm-hmm. And then the Motown stuff for me happened 5th, 6th, 7th. Okay. Like them at it. Yeah. So there's a compilation record to this day. Like the name Tyrone Davis, I know that's a name that y'all familiar with. Mm-hmm. And it's like people know In the Mood. Nah, Turn Back in the Hands of Time. I'm bopping to that in sixth grade. No one knew what was in my headphones.
Nah.
And my first exposure to even rap at that time was when somebody printed out the lyrics for Ludacris' Roll Out My Business. And I had never heard the song before. I didn't know nothing about the sample. I'm just reading the words. I'm like, he says this to music? This doesn't compute to me. But the way that like music has evolved, incorporating the past, I love it. But I also feel like in 2014 or 2015, it just stopped being original.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say I felt like the shift happened after 9/11. Mm. That's when everything changed musically. There was still good music being produced, but as far as that's when hip-hop took over. Like the late 2000s and the 2001, there was no more quote unquote pop music. The boy bands died down. Yeah. The Britney Spears, Christina, those kind of types of artists, pop music kind of took a back seat and hip hop just crept over and it's maintained its throne since then.
Yeah.
As far as hip hop has dominated everything. And I think 2001, in my opinion, that's when that shift happened. But I know definitely in 2014, 2015, that's when like trap, which is still under that hip hop umbrella, just took it even further.
Yeah.
And I should be more specific with what I meant. Because we talked about sampling and you know, mm-hmm. in bits and pieces. I think for me, when it comes to sampled music, I think after 2014, 2015, like mm-hmm. it's almost unlistenable to, at least for me, because mm-hmm. like
right.
when we go back, we listen to the original songs mm-hmm. and then I'm hearing a song, like just glancing on the radio, I'm like, you didn't even reuse the sample from the original song.
Right.
You sampled the sample.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like,
people are sampling songs that just came out.
Right.
I thought the whole point was to sample like a classic record.
Right.
Or a record that we don't know about, like from, you know, 40, 50 years ago
mm-hmm.
and make it relevant. These guys are sampling songs that came out in the same year.
Yeah. Just because. Yeah. I don't know.
But. Like, I mean, it works.
Because the culture is different.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, in my opinion, hip hop changed when Soulja Boy showed up. You know what I mean? Because he started making that stuff very, like, dancey, mm-hmm. you know, kind of put a spin on hip hop, but it's still hip hop trap, I guess you could say. So I feel like it shifted then. You know what I mean? Because it stayed there for, it's still to this day, it's still there. And now you got drill music, you know what I mean? Which is definitely created over in London first. We just not getting it, you know what I mean? So it's kind of, hip hop's like kind of all over the place, you know, so, yeah.
And I think there's a, I do think there's a beauty to it.
Yeah. You
know, because like, to have such a genre, have such a wide range of things under that umbrella, mm-hmm. it's a beautiful thing. But I sometimes wonder, because we'll get to what you pulled off last summer in a second. I sometimes wonder when the creativity left the game. I mean, don't get me wrong. I get it. Numbers pay the bills. Mm-hmm. Numbers keep people in power. Right. Ask me why I hate analytics in sports, but that's a story for another day. But it's just like, I get it. You got to give the people what they want, or at least what the numbers say that they want. But it's just like, everything sounds, no, not everything sounds the same, but what seems to get pushed sounds the same.
Right.
I don't really like it.
I think I agree to that. I just think that it's more noticeable, because if you think about like Motown, that era, a lot of those hit records, if you look up the top 100, a lot of those records had a similar vibe too. So you had like the Temptations, and you had, well, whatever other five-man group that was out too, that was charting under them. That was the sound of that era. So I think there's definitely a, there's some kind of a method to that, to where whoever is in charge of the music industry, whatever the, whatever they deem to be the sound, or whatever people seem to be consuming, they want to keep that going. And so in the 80s, when you had like all these big hair rock bands, and those guys was on top of the charts, Poison and White Snake, all them songs sounded the same too. You couldn't tell one from the other. So I think every era has has that something where it's like everything on the radio, every song pretty sounds somewhat similar. I think it's because they follow the trend of what's, what are people consuming, what's popular, what works. But it's just, it seems these last few years, everything's just been, we haven't shifted to something new. It's always just these different variations of the same thing. And it's, I think it's more noticeable now, because it's less instrumentation, it's less creativity. But at least back in those days, those, you know, real musicians, real guitar solos, real drums. So there was a little bit of uniqueness, but now it's everything's a lot less intricate. So it's you notice it more.
Speaking of unique, tell me about Prince, man. I mean, I don't think there is even a debate anymore, because, you know, Prince and Mike are two completely different entities.
But yeah.
What was it about Prince specifically that has him as your guy?
Prince is, I mean, he's an artist. He's the artist. You know what I mean? And I think what I respect most about him was the fact that he was a black man that was playing rock and roll. And not that that's taboo, because we know where rock and roll comes from, but I'm talking about in the time when he was coming of age, black artists did black music. You know what I'm saying? He went against the grain and was doing rock, straight up rock and roll music, and made it okay, made people realize, okay, black people and black music isn't just one thing, isn't just one sound. You know what I'm saying? So it was okay for black people to dive into rock and roll. But then he'll turn around and do some R&B or some jazz. Or he, Prince was doing records in the 90s where he's rapping. You know what I'm saying? So the versatility, the creativity, and just the fact that he was so instrumental in cultivating a sound. Like, people are to this day using his drums. And just the foresight that he had to do that. So many of his records, he's literally using the same drum sounds on so many records. And I feel like that was strategic, you know what I mean? So he's great, man. Seriously.
So as a producer, Cam, what do you feel like your sound is?
Everything. My sound's basically just life. There's nothing that I can categorize it. You know what I mean? So for the most part, my sound is the sound. I don't have no category. I can't put in anything. You know, so it is what it is.
Well, what it was last summer was number one on the iTunes charts for how many weeks in a row?
Like three.
Like straight up. And yeah. I know I asked you, and I know other people have asked you. You ain't gaming the system at all, did you?
How the album got number one, it was like word of mouth. Social media. I hate social media, but it's a beautiful thing at the same time if you're using it properly. There was I didn't hit up Spotify or the crazy media outlets. I didn't go on the back end paying them, because you can actually do that. But I got a call from Chris Jackson, and he's like, can we look at the charts? I was like, nah, I wasn't even thinking about the charts, honestly. He's like, bro, you're number one. And I was like, what? You gotta be kidding me. You know, I'm above Burna Boy, you know what I mean? Burna Boy is one of the top killing African artists, you know what I mean? And I was just honored to be number one for something I wasn't thinking about doing. I just wanted to put good music out, you know.
I mean, what is it that inspires y'all in the work that you do?
What inspires me is my kids do. My son and my daughter, they keep me going. You know, honestly, if I didn't have them too, I think I would be far behind. You know what I mean? Really far behind. Because like I said before, like the going through life pushes your art forward. I don't know how it is for other people, but for me, when when life is not consistent like that, when it's life like it's like this, and you're going higher, but at the same time, you know, you're coming back down, but you're still going back higher. Coming down, but you're going back higher even more. That art can't stay the same. It cannot. Your sound cannot stay the same. If you're like this, a lot of producers wonder why. Hell, I can't. I have a block. I hear that so many times, and it's like you have a block because you're not pushing your life forward. You know what I mean? You're not thinking forward. You know, so when people say I have writer's block, you think you're still writing the same thing. You're still doing the same thing. You're still talking about the same thing. You're producing the same quality that you've been doing. So that's what I think about that, though. You think they're going to win tonight? I think Miami's going to win.
Nice clip.
Just because, so they can push the game
forward. If it's scripted like I think, it's going to be a game seven.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You do know that the NBA, if you like go on their website and read the fine print, they're like, seriously, they describe. I'm not joking. No, I'm not joking.
Go ahead, Ty.
They describe themselves as sports entertainment. Seriously.
Not you being a conspiracy theorist.
I believe
it. No, that's a fact.
You what? Why is the camera now rolling for this? It's not y'all fault.
Seriously, there is an element in any sport that you have to control it.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, you have to follow the money.
You have to control it.
Follow the bread.
You have to control it.
So follow the bread.
Let me get this right. What y'all are trying to tell me is, you are fully in belief that the NBA is scripted.
Yes.
Now, what I'm saying, no, listen.
I believe it.
the athleticism is real, obviously.
Of course.
The gameplay is real. But the elements like maybe point spread, maybe the referees are told to miss certain things, let certain things go, call things that probably could have been let go. And even some of these players, these guys are making the max contract players. You can't tell me some of them ain't signing NDAs to give certain information if maybe the coach says, hey, listen, I need you to pull back. There's been plenty of examples where we've seen LeBron pull back when we know he could have went hard. Curry pull back when we know he could have stepped up and got the W. These guys are paid millions and millions of dollars. If somebody tells them, listen, we got to keep this point spread a certain level, we need y'all to, it's time to pull back. Or refs, we need y'all to, you know what I'm saying?
So basically, the NBA's push into gambling is just
It's about the gambling. It's also about TV ratings.
Yeah.
Five games is great, but seven games is better. The more ratings, more ads, more ad revenue, more sponsors. It's a business, bro.
So what you are saying is by the time people hear this, there will be at least a game six bare minimum.
I believe so.
At least. Yeah. Now, this is my thing. If there's a situation where it ends tonight, that doesn't discredit our theory.
There could be a monetary
situation where it's like, all right, listen. Because this is the Nuggets' first time ever. They've never been to the, you know what I'm saying? It could be a situation where it's like, listen, let's just close it out. Storybook ending. Because at the end of the day, it's storytelling too. Just that element is in there too. So it all depends on whoever's in charge, what they want. You know what I'm saying? And so whoever that person is, I don't know if it's Adam Silver or whoever's over him, but there's definitely a Vince McMahon
situation
going in there.
I done made the PGA mad. I'm about to make the NBA mad, bro.
But I think everyone knows that. And seriously, if you go to their website, there is something in there. And I can show you on my phone, but it basically describes itself as sports entertainment, which it is.
But isn't that any sports entity?
Yeah, that raises the question. There's been plenty of football games where people question calls and question plays and stuff that seemed sketchy. It can definitely be an element, but I think it's more prominent in the NBA.
Yeah.
Here is where I don't know if I'll go that far, but I will go. I'll say these two things. First of all, I hate the idea of load management. I also, from my understanding of talking to a few pros and doing some reading and whatnot, load management wasn't the player's idea. It was the front offices. And the same front offices that will then go to that player later and say, see this contract you want? He didn't play that many games, so our sample size is whatever it is. And it bothers me to absolute pieces that this is our game now. Because you talked about loving Kobe growing up, right? Kobe and missed games.
Right.
We talk about, look, Michael Jordan is my GOAT. It is what it is. But part of that is because, aside from his baseball sabbatical, homie didn't miss games. And I understand that the stress of the season can really take a toll on the body. I think 82 games is too much for the regular season. But it really does mean something when your best players are out there, if they can be.
That's true. Yeah.
But then when you got guaranteed money, hey, my knee hurts.
Yeah, hello. Hello.
I'll come to practice, but I'm not gonna miss. I'm not gonna be able to come to the game, Doc.
I think our knee hurting and their knee hurting is different, though.
Yeah,
I'll say that because I wimp out if I walk on a bum ankle and I'm gonna ask them to run full speed. They got to do some sort of treatment. You feel me? At least that's what I would think. And one thing I wanted to make sure I got to before we wrapped up. take your careers on the music side and sum it up into one sentence of what you want it to be, what would you say?
That's a great question. Everlasting. That's basically it. In one word. You know what I mean? Everlasting.
I like that. That was good. I was going to say, till the work's done. Till it's done. Keep going. Whether 20 people hear it, 20 streams, 2,000 streams, keep going. Keep going. Because it's going to pay off. It's got to.
I will say this, though. Me and Ty has been at this forever. You know what I mean? Like, I met Ty when I was 19. And it's been that since then. You know, every year we've said, yeah, we going up. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Every year after watch night service.
Yeah, we going up.
Each other, Happy New Year. And then we'd be like, this the year.
This the year. You know, but looking at it is like, wow, you know, we do come up, but how God has it planned, it might be a come up in health, it might be a come up in finances, it might be a come up in certain different things, you know, because, you know, the way it works is like, this is not our journey, you know what I mean? It's more so what God already has written down. Because, you know, at the end of the day, God be like, okay, they're not ready just yet. Because we talk all the time. We say, man, if we knew back then, everybody says that. It's like we would have been on the road playing for an artist or something. Yeah. But, you know, now we look at it, we like, man, we would have messed that opportunity up.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? We would have screwed up real big time. But now that we are where we're at, God can probably be like, okay, now they're ready. You know what I mean? But there's so many situations that we've dealt with that we look back and say, wow, it would have been a different way, or this would have happened differently.
Some stuff would have been a disaster had we gotten the stuff and the opportunities that we was praying for back then. If God had allowed it to happen, we'd probably be in a bad way. So it's all about timing. And that's what I was saying earlier, like, don't look at what other people are doing, because it'll get you off track. You just focus on where you are, right, and just ride that wave. Ride that wave and show yourself worthy to handle the next level. You know what I'm saying?
Fellas, I appreciate you. I know some of it, but tell the people how to find you and what you're up to next.
I'm on Instagram at Taron Music, one word, Taron Music. All my mixtapes are on Bandcamp, tybrown.com/Bandcamp. Or you can do bandcamp.com/Ty Brown, either one. What's next? I'm currently finishing up my gospel project, which you are on.
Boom.
And
in the edit, just say boom.
So yeah, finishing up that. I'm still, you know, producing for other artists and stuff like that. Just work, client work. So that's it for me.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, CamProject88. My next album, Ocean Floor 2, is coming out July 9th. That's what's happening right now. I got a situation with my homegirl Erica. We have a band, basically just me and her, called The Children with no E. And that's a different situation. And also, next Tuesday, John Coffee coming out. Me and Ty and John Paul's fusion, new age jazz band, I guess you could say. That's nasty. That's coming out next Tuesday.
What is it, June 20th?
June 20th. Yeah, that's next Tuesday. Yeah. So that's what's going on. We still working on other things, past the series, live recording.
Yeah.
That we going to do that.
Yeah, we need you for that.
Yeah, too, we need it. Yeah. We need you're edit this.
You're playing
we
need
Unqua
for
that. Camera over there.
Say, get him over.
Pan it over there. And then, we got that coming up. And then, there's a lot of
LaTanya's.
LaTanya's
release.
Yeah. We did a live recording in the year. Last year, it's coming out. What, this summer?
This summer,
yeah. Last year, so yeah. We just got a lot of the stuff going on, so yeah. Well, it's awesome.
Look, I did my part. I made sure that people got a chance to see it, so y'all should go ahead and check that out. But Ty Brown, Cam Fletcher, thank you both so much for blessing episode 2, crossover 2, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. I'm so happy we got to do
what's
this.
What's the name of this episode?
This episode, I don't know yet. But I will know by the time it gets published.
It's called Green Wayfair.
Unbelievable.
Because the couch is, I like this couch. One of the editors back there, this couch is not.
Was it turf?
Turf Couch, episode 2.
Turf Couch. That's not going to be the title at all. Not at all.
No, but thank you for having us, bro. We appreciate it.
This is beautiful. I love this. Awesome. This is great.
We're done.
This is awesome.
Apple S.
Woo! Just hit the stop button.